This is the John and Tom Show, episode 17, May 28th, 2021.
You're sick.
I screwed the pooch on that one. I don't know where that came from, but somebody somewhere was brilliant enough with to come up with, I screwed the pooch. Because it just flows.
It does. And it swims about in your head. You know, I mean, you can't, once you hear it, you just can't get it out of your head.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant. So you were saying?
Truth doesn't matter. It makes absolutely no sense to speak the truth because we now have become a country of baseless accusations and conspiracy theories.
I kind of look at it as it's all has to be in the narrative.
Yes.
Truth is irrelevant.
Yeah,
all that matters is the narrative. It's like a story that's being told.
Truth is in the ears of the beholder.
Yeah. And as a, you know, once the president of the United States says alternative facts, you know, then okay, so that means we're waiting for the president to tell us what is real and what is true, regardless of the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And the president is the most powerful person in the world, so. Yeah, that we kind of things just kind of go up on side their head.
Yeah, I had to agree with Paul Ryan, the former Republican.
You agreed with Paul Ryan?
Oh yeah. Well, he is a never Trumper.
He's had some moments, but he was pretty awful before.
Yeah, he was, but I think the reality of the present situation with the Republican Party has hit him right between the eyes.
Don't forget he's an opportunist. But you think as an opportunist you would be on the Trump side because that they have the sway, right?
Right.
So maybe he's just not a smart opportunist. Maybe he's a dumb opportunist.
See, every time he jumps in the foray and so now he's back in the news. When he was Speaker of the House, of course he was in the news all the time, and now all of a sudden he pops up and he's right back in the news again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that could well be. But one thing he said, I saw him on an interview. Not an interview. He was doing a speech about this business, and he said, if the Republican Party becomes a one-personality party, then that party's going nowhere.
And Paul Ryan said this.
Yes, Paul Ryan said that.
Yes. I mean, I guess that remains to be seen.
Yeah.
You know, at this point, it seems like he's wrong.
it
seems like he's wrong because...
the truth?
Truth doesn't matter.
And
the logic doesn't matter. You know, the majority of Republicans still support Trump wholeheartedly. You know, as you say... they're called the Trumplicans.
They are no longer the
Republicans. They are the Trumplicans.
Yeah.
The party is fracturing actively. It has started fracturing earlier this year and continues to fracture. And we'll see where those fault lines go and how much of a fracture it is and if they are totally separate. It does seem that... some of these Trumplicans feel that the rhinos, as they call them, Republicans in name only, are equally as detrimental to the United States as liberals and the left wing, which is kind of nuts.
Oh, it is kind of nuts. It is nuts, man.
For example, Liz Cheney, you know, who voted 93% in line with Trump. With Trump during the 4 years, 93% of the time she voted in line with his policies and everything he wanted. And she took a stand on January 6th. And now, because she did that, she is equal in detriment to the country, to the liberals and the left wing. Because once you, it's like a cult. You know, you have to be 100% on board. If there's one thing that dear leader doesn't want or doesn't like, you're gone. Scientology. Mm-hmm. This is Scientology. This is cult. It's very it's amazing that it's still going on. But it is. I mean, you ask anybody who's involved in the Republican side, they will tell you the same thing. I mean, Trump has an absolute stranglehold on the party, and it's, you know, most likely going to get worse. I don't, unless somehow he's convicted or something.
Well,
which
you
would
know,
be awesome.
John, like, are we on now?
Mm-hmm. Yes, Tom.
I didn't know. You didn't say, John.
I haven't done the intro yet, but that's okay.
Okay.
I'll do it separately.
All right, okay. Well, now, see, you got me messed up. What was I going to say? Yeah.
That's not the sound effect. That's actually me doing that live.
It is, yeah. Man. That's great.
Yeah, that's
man. I've never heard anybody do a cricket like that's impressive.
Probably
John.
Could have had a career in sound effects or something.
Yeah, like, I guess, dude. That was great.
Or Bobby McFerrin, like that guy.
I didn't know.
Don't worry, be happy.
I know you're a musician.
I'm something. Don't worry about it. I'm something.
But
I don't know what I am.
I didn't know you were such a genius of. Sound effects. That's really neat.
Yeah, I got lots of them. I got a million of them.
No, what I was going to say, really, that we get back to the Trumplicans. Yeah, this is one thing that Trump's into. Any kind of legal action that's going against him, in his mind, is a political witch hunt. It's all political. Yeah. It doesn't have anything to do with whether or not I'm a criminal. It's all and there's one other
That's
thing.
That's the standard mafia boss sort of response. Or you know, it's a total narcissistic insane person's response. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, it's to me, it's just another one of his conspiracy theories. You know,
he can do no wrong.
Right, exactly.
So that's the thing. We talked about this before. It's like he can do no wrong. If someone accuses him of ever doing anything wrong, it's a witch hunt, or it's they're off base, or something like that. Yeah, and that's just the way it's been. His whole life has been like that.
Yeah, well, and it can continue to be. But I think one thing I did hear this was an interview. This woman was a former Trump appointee or whatever, said, you know, he is really, even though he puts on the facade, oh, I'm not, you know, I'm made of Teflon and all that, nothing. He is very, very paranoid.
Very sensitive
about these investigations that are going on. And his ex-CFO, Weisselberg, he's going to flip. I'm convinced he's going to flip, because they've got the problem he has. He's got major tax problems with the IRS.
Well, that's how they brought Al Capone down. And there's a lot of people think that's how that Trump is going to come down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'd be okay with that.
Well, he's, you know, basically from what I see, he's being, they're pursuing him for tax fraud.
Yeah. New York is going after him. I think there is a federal investigation too. Is it just states?
Can they
do it? They probably can't do federal because he was president or something. But states are allowed to do it.
Yeah, yeah. They've called for a special grand jury in New York, definitely.
And that would be you know, if that does happen, if he does get in trouble, you know, goes, you know, accused and then actually gets sentenced. That mm-hmm. should be a national holiday.
From
now on, you know,
absolutely.
That, you know, I would celebrate that. That would be close to Christmas and July 4th from my book.
Absolutely.
It's like a Independence Trump Day or something.
Just like he's dead. He's dead. The Wicked Witch is dead.
Yeah. Don't they have something for Napoleon or something when he got exiled? They probably have some celebration.
Yes.
I think we should, you know, he could put Trump on Elba, put move Mar-a-Lago to Elba.
To Elba. Yes. Yeah.
And we'll be done with it.
Yeah.
He might like it.
But, he would because you think, oh man, Napoleon was exiled here. If you could
set up some, yeah, exactly. only the best. And you set up some fake social media thing where he can continue to tweet and make it look like he's got millions of responses and stuff. He'd be happy.
Yeah, he really.
All he needs is to feel that millions of people care about him and like him. So if you just feed that and like put him on Elba, put him in Mar-a-Lago, let him think he's cool. And yeah, that's my theory on that.
That's an intriguing idea.
Might have like some legs.
You know, what has we talked about this a little earlier, and that, you know, I think we both agreed that the truth is relative anymore.
Yeah, that's a big point. It's not valued.
No. Truth has no value, exactly. And it all depends on who says it and if it's what you want to hear.
It's in the narrative.
Exactly. Yeah,
it's already out there what people are supposed to believe on certain sides. And and it can kind of go on the other side too. You know, it can be for any extreme group or
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, like, would you call progressives extremists? Not quite, but close.
But close.
Maybe
yeah.
close.
Yeah.
I just did a little research and I found some interesting numbers on the Democratic Party.
Okay.
I just came across this Gallup poll in July 2020 of all people in the United States from this Gallup poll, 26% identified as liberal. That's across both parties. 34% conservative and 40% moderate. That's just the big picture of everyone, right? And you get inside the Democratic Party, and 47% of Democrats identify as liberal or very liberal.
Okay.
Not quite 50%, but that's higher than it was. That's been creeping up over the last 10, 20 years.
Okay.
It used to be in the 30s. And moderates were higher on the Democrat side, like in the 50s. And now it's starting to go more liberal or very liberal on the Dems.
So you're saying it's becoming less moderate and more leftist?
It is, but it's still not the majority. It is not totally majority.
Yeah, it's not the majority overall.
It's not the majority, right. But it is pretty high. It's mm-hmm. gone up. And 47% seems probably low for some people. To think, you know, a lot of people would think the Democrats are all liberal, right?
Yeah.
Most right-wing people would say all Democrats are liberal.
Mm-hmm.
But this saying that, and this is a pretty legitimate poll, I think, and if you look at previous polls, they were only in the 30%, 30s, 20s back when, as liberals and very liberal. Now mm-hmm. it's up to 47, which is getting higher, but it's still not even 50%. Not even half of the Democrats consider themselves liberal. 45% consider themselves moderate, okay, in the Democratic Party, and 14% consider themselves conservative.
Yeah.
So you're looking at and this is now, this is today, this is like July 2020. This is, you know, if you did this 10 years ago, it was probably like 52% are moderate or 55% moderate, 35% liberal, mm-hmm. but it's gone up, and that trend is probably going to continue. But at the same time, it's just sort of just like to the any conservatives that are listening to this or any Republicans, you know, not all Democrats are liberal minded, fully liberal minded. Most I would think that, you know, I was a little surprised. I thought the majority would be moderate. But if you combine moderate and conservative, you're at like 59-60%. So So moderate and conservative is like over 50%. So anyway, I guess what I'm trying to say is that not all Democrats are liberal. However, it is trending more liberal.
Yeah.
And I would like to see the same poll on the other side. I didn't get a chance to look at that similar poll on the right wing.
Okay. I mean,
you would probably have to say, you would, instead of saying conservative, you'd say Trumplican.
Yeah.
Trumplican, yeah. Moderate, or, you know, whatever. And I'd just like to see that. And we can maybe start getting that data now and then see it in 5 years and how many people are going in what direction. But
yeah.
I guess where I'm headed with this is in 2024, we're most likely going to see the Republican Party as being Trumplican.
Yes.
Majority is Trumplican.
I agree.
75% probably.
Yeah.
Right. And so you have 25% fracturing to the middle, some unknown state. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the left, which is pretty, you know, supportive of Biden at this point right now. I feel like Biden is doing pretty good. He's towing the line, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's towing the line between progressive and moderate. And it's yet to be determined. I've been a little harsh on him in the last several episodes. I thought like, oh, well, who's driving the ship and who's doing this and that? And I didn't know, but it seems like he's sort of going back and forth. He's trying to be fair and be in the little bit in the middle, you know, but it's yet to be determined if at the end of this 4 years, if he's going to be seen as taking a progressive stance versus taking a moderate stance. If we do shift into a progressive stance over the next 4 years, then you're in 2024, you're going to have two options to vote. You're going to have far left and far right.
Far right, yeah.
So what does that leave us? It leaves an opportunity for the middle, the 40% moderate of people. If you know, look at that Gallup poll, 40% consider themselves moderate. Who are those people going to vote for? You know, because you got far left and far right. If Biden's administration goes progressive, which I'm not saying it is, but if it does, there's an opportunity for a third party to jump in and go middle.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think your comment earlier about Biden is my opinion on it is he's slow coming out of the gate. And everybody says, well, he's an old man. And I don't think that's got a damn thing to do with it. I think the country was in such turmoil and there's so many, you know, between COVID and all that. I mean, it probably took him a while to figure, you know, where, you know, how do we attack this? I mean, he was left with monumental problems.
Oh yeah.
You know, so the fact that to me, I think he was just slow coming out of the gates. You know, he took forever to have a news conference and all that, but I think it's because he was just trying to figure out where to go, you know.
Well, yeah, it is pretty monumental. I mean, think about the divide in this country and how do you even decide what to do? What's your move? You know, like this country is so divided. But right now, I think his acceptance rate or approval rate is like 55% or something.
And, yeah, that's better than
Trump never had more than 40.
No.
I don't think he ever had more than 40. So 55 is pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, and he's doing the best he can. I will say that I'm a little, I don't know. I haven't been paying that close attention, but Kamala Harris is kind of, I don't see her. Maybe she's doing what a normal vice president should do, which is just, you know, be in the background and do their work and not be a media sensation. But I haven't heard much about her or what she's doing. Have you?
No.
Maybe that's what vice presidents are supposed to do.
Well, yeah,
I don't know.
Vice presidents, you know, vice presidents really, I forget who it was that was vice president said this. They don't do piss in a bucket. You know, yeah, that's what he said. It's, you know, and it's really true. I mean, how much, well, think about over the years, John, how much have we ever heard about the vice president?
The only one that I can think of that really had, well, he's like the devil, was Dick Cheney.
Oh, yeah. Right? Like, yeah, oh, yeah.
He was the president, basically. He just didn't talk.
Yeah.
But he did all the thinking and actions and everything.
He was a hell of a lot smarter than Bush. Of course, that's not hard to do.
Bush was pretty smart, but he was a little doofusy, but Cheney was kind of just an evil guy, I think. And
yeah,
but yeah, as far as vice presidents go, there's really haven't been too many that have been impactful. And I guess Kamala Harris, I don't know. I'm sure she's doing doing things. I just haven't been following. But yeah, I do still follow some of the Republican people that are constantly harping on her for not going to the border, of this horrible border crisis and all these other things that they tout. But the border crisis, is it a crisis? Maybe. I don't know. I'm not going to talk about it. It's just, I don't want to focus on other things. We've talked about that enough in prior episodes. And I haven't really been following it that much. And I think it's just, yes, it's always going to be a bit of an issue down there.
Have you heard the latest conspiracy? I mean, this is the latest.
Hit me with it.
Okay. There is a retired Colonel McGregor who's a Trump champion. And now don't forget this. Trump wanted to appoint him as the U.S. ambassador to Germany. Remember that. Okay. Now, I heard this McGregor on a radio broadcast recording, and he said that Biden is all about getting rid of white people of white European descent. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's why he's appointing all these, you know, blacks and Latinos and whatever. That's part of his master plan. But the biggest part of his master plan is to allow all these immigrants to pour in through the border in the South. And
trying to eliminate the whites.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. And then.
And Biden would want to do this. Why?
You'd have to ask Colonel McGregor.
Part of his evil plan.
Yeah, exactly. It's part of his evil plan. But then, I don't know how he got off on this. He said that the U.S. never wanted to enter into World War II. That the U.S. had no interest in fighting the Germans and ending Nazism. But again, as I said earlier, this was Trump's boy to become ambassador to Germany.
Hmm. Well, sounds like a winner.
Yeah. Yeah. He's trying to, Biden is trying to drive white people of European descent out and bring in Latinos and Asians and all this.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just had a thought. I don't know if you ever heard or saw the Oliver Stone documentary, sort of documentary that he does, Real History of the United States or something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's good. But there's something in there. It talks about World War II. And we came pretty late into that war.
Yes.
And the Russians paid the biggest toll. By a lot. Mm-hmm. 20 million deaths.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
It was just attrition. It was horrible. We came very, very late. Very late to that war. And we take a lot of credit. And we did. And a lot of people paid dearly for it and did make an impact. But, I mean, it was, you know, some people argue the war had almost already been won by that time. By the time we entered it. So it's, watch that documentary if you get a chance. It's really intense.
Yeah.
And it's Oliver Stone, so take it with a grain of salt. But it's really, really heavy stuff. It kind of makes you rethink a little bit of the things we've been taught in history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the truths of Truman, the bomb, World War II, our motivations, and what were the motivations and the continuation of the, you know, warmongering and the industrial military industrial complex.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting. It was definitely a tangent for me to bring that up, but I just think people should check that out. I think it's called The Real History of the United States.
Yeah, it could be.
But Oliver Stone, check it out. You know, it's like a barrage of information.
Yeah.
You have to watch it a few times and you might get a little pissed off when you watch it because it's probably going to go against a lot of what you know about history. Mm-hmm. You see, people that write history, usually the winners, of things.
That's what most Germans say, that history is written by the winners.
And, right.
You know,
it's true.
Okay, sure.
I mean, it's true. I mean, it's like, you know, that's what that, and that's how things get remembered. And, mm-hmm. So anyway, I don't know why I went on that tangent, but
well, you know, your point about us entering World War II late is true. That war had been going on for 2 years and 3 months before we entered. So the war for us didn't last quite 4 years, but in Europe it was over 6 years.
We allowed Russians to take heavy losses. Heavy and we losses. Were allies with the Russians.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had, you know, that was, we were allies with them against mm-hmm. the Germans and the Japanese. And that, you know, I am not familiar with how that, I think in even in that Oliver Stone, you start seeing how it soured in the Cold War and all that. After World War II, how the relations soured between Russia or Russia and Soviet Union and us, but we were allies up to that point. So kind of interesting.
I forget. I saw a quote, and I think I think it was Churchill. I'm not sure about this, but he said, "War makes friends of enemies and enemies of friends."
Yeah,
and how true that is.
What a whirlwind of you know, relationships we've had with Russia since then.
Oh yeah. Right?
And you think about like Gorbachev and tear down that wall with like, who's that? Reagan said that, right?
Yeah. Reagan
Mr. said, Gorbachev, tear down that wall.
Yeah.
And they did. And then it's now, you know, and then Putin steps in and now we're in current day, sort of this like oligarchy kind of fascist.
Yeah, exactly.
Like in parentheses, communist, place. Very, and it's just tenuous, and like in the relationship when you start thinking about Trump too, like Trump's relationship with these dictators and fascist leaders, and they're not fascist. I mean, there's no fascist countries right now, but you know, they kind of are
well
in their own way, but like they're communist in name only, C-I-N-O.
Mm-hmm.
Sinos.
Yeah.
communist in name only. No, it's communist in name only.
Communist in name only.
Because they're actually probably fascist, but you know, and Trump's relationships with these people, like kissing their ass, the ass of China. And even though he was hard on China, he still kissed the guy's ass.
It's because we owe him so damn much money.
Kiss the ass of Putin, kiss the ass of Kim Jong-un. Unbelievable. I mean, and it's funny because as a byproduct of that, like some of those guys, they love it. And that's why that's why there was a little bit more peace, because those guys love the ass kissing. It's a tactic.
Yeah.
It's actually a tactic that works with dictators. Yeah. And I, you know, maybe we should take notes on that and say, maybe in some cases we do kiss, we just sort of falsely kiss ass to North Korea. Say, yeah, you know what? You guys are awesome. You're doing great. Give them a little golf clap, you know, like, and then maybe the, you know, cause you can see what happened just recently, maybe a month ago, Kim Jong-un, was saying that like, oh, you know, because of Biden, we're going to start throwing around the nukes again. And, it's like, if you don't kiss our ass, we're going to, you know, continue to do this stuff. And so it's a sort of like dictator playbook. You have to, mm-hmm. you know, it's like this. And I think Trump was playing that because he understood them, because he kind of wanted to be one of those guys,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it's just very bizarre. It's just how we've ended up in this particular situation is strange as hell. And, you know, what we do have a fairly sane administration in place.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Finally.
Yeah.
Finally. Yes. After four years of insanity.
Right.
But again, I think that's why Biden was a little slow coming out of the blocks, because you know, this country was in a hell of a, it still is, in my eyes, it was in a hell of a mess. Where do you start? You
know, it's been in a mess for a long time. And it's all, you know, like we've, you can always find a mess too. You can, whatever you focus on. It's we have 350 million people here, totally diverse, so many different backgrounds, so many mm-hmm. different people, with different needs and socioeconomic strata. And, you know, each one of these cities, it could be a different country, almost like a different state could be a different country.
Oh,
it's almost like Europe. You know, we're such a diverse place to try to rule under one It's every year it gets more difficult, I'd say, you know, as people, you know, immigration and more people and it is hard. It's just difficult. We're not like any other place in the world.
No.
A lot of the other places or other countries are fairly homogenous, or they have control. Like China has super control over their citizens. Some of the larger countries, Brazil and India, you know, India has its own issues. You know, they're very like religion based. You know, if you're Hindi or different,
yeah,
you know, there's different caste system. Mm-hmm, yeah, so, but most of them are Indian people, right? Or
or
Sikh, mm-hmm. Or other, you know, religions. That's some Muslim too, I think. But in America, it's everything.
Yeah.
Every single country in the world, every single culture in the world is represented here.
Exactly. Right? Well, it's like Russian is Russians.
Right.
India is Indians.
Homogeneous cultures are much easier to
rule. Yeah. Japan is Japan. China is China. We are unique in that. Well, the only other country that I can think of offhand that is a lot like us, and that would be Canada. I don't think as much.
Well, they don't have the diversity of geography, though. They're cold all the time. So we even have diversity of our, you know, we got warm and cold, even in that too. So they're all cold. They're all like they can have. They're all the north. It'd be like if the United States was just like from Indianapolis up.
Maine and
Montana, yeah, and exactly. You know, that's kind of like, you know, because it takes a certain type of person to live in that climate.
Well, and you know, too, 90% of the Canadian population lives within 100 miles of the U.S. border.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a great stat, Tom. Thank you. I didn't know that.
But 90% live within
100 miles?
Within 100 miles. Because if you look at like Toronto is right across Lake Erie.
Yeah.
You know, and Saskatchewan.
It's interesting.
Though if you'll ever notice, those are well within reach of the U.S. borders because a lot of people, there's a lot of U.S. industry. I knew Ford has manufacturing plants in Canada. They have for years.
Yeah.
I think GM does. So we've got a lot of... I guess international trade.
Yeah. We also have, Canada. They also have 1/10 the population.
This is true. So,
But they are getting more diverse there too than they used to be, I'd say. Mm-hmm.
Probably the most diverse city in Canada is Toronto.
Oh, yeah.
I've
heard great things about Toronto.
Really,
I was in Montreal too a couple of years ago, and that was an interesting place.
I felt
European almost.
I was in. Well, I can tell you when I was in Montreal, it was Expo 67.
Oh, wow,
Expo. And they had the World Expo was in Montreal, and you talk about
that's why the baseball team is called the Montreal Expos.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, exactly. because of the Expo. Yeah. Yes, exactly. But anyway, you talk about assholes. I mean, Jesus Christ. The expo was fun, and it's a beautiful city. I'll give you that. Canada's a beautiful country. If you could get rid of the fucking French Canadians, it would be a wonderful place.
Yeah, there might have been, especially back then, there's probably extra, I don't know, like rudeness or something. I don't know. Yeah. But, yeah, I was up there a couple years ago, and it was all right. I mean, it just felt like a different country, and it was a different country, but it felt like Europe a little bit, like the French, very French.
The official language of Quebec is French.
Je parle français.
Yeah, everything's in French, and so it's like you're exactly right. It's like going into an annex of France.
Yeah. I think we picked up one French listener on our last episode. Speaking of our last episode, I wanted to thank Dr. Rosie Sender for being on and helping us with our discussion on healthcare. One question that came up from that episode for me as I listened to it once or twice, and I was like, you know, we talked a lot about a lot of things, but one thing that I never, I didn't really touch on is why is healthcare so expensive in the United States? Like, what is the real reason? And that's a big question. I'm just going to go real quick down a little bullet point of what seems like the reasons versus other places, but other industrialized countries. Why are we, you know, so we have a lot of different systems, right? So there's administrative waste. It's like a big percentage of like trying to figure out all these different systems and manage all that. The drug prices are four times higher. And I think we touched on that might be why, because of the innovation and the cost of making new drugs. Doctors and nurses are paid a lot more. Hospital. So I think the most important point in all this is that hospitals, that it's a philosophical thing. And I think Rosie touched on it. Hospitals making profits, profit driven versus, helping your citizens and then healthcare being a right from a government perspective, some regulation, or is these hospitals are making profits. So there's a very different focus. Okay. So that's probably the biggest thing for me. And then another one is lawyers and lawsuits. So you're going to sort of change their care based on lawyers and lawsuits. And then the last one is no regulation on prices. You can get charged $40 or $4,000. There's no regulation on that.
And every time there has been an effort to control those costs, it's been shot down by lobbyists.
And it's only the only way to get a handle on it is through the government. And the government won't touch it with a 10-foot pole. The only time we did touch it was with Obama. He forced it through, and all he did was sort of just the Affordable Care Act to get people. He really just tried to get people insured, the uninsured insured. And he did a good job, and he still left that option open to keep your private insurance. So anyway, we got a long way to go on this.
I've got it. You know, you're talking about for-profit hospitals. I've got a very good personal example. My late brother, this was a few years ago, maybe, I don't know, 10 years ago or more. Anyway, he lived in the colony in North Dallas, and he was an avid bicycle rider. Well, one day somehow he had an accident, and he wasn't hit or anything, but he got thrown from his bicycle and broke his leg very badly. Okay. Now, he was a Vietnam vet, but when the ambulance got there, they didn't take him to the VA hospital. They took him to this other hospital. Okay. So they set his leg and all that stuff and blah, blah, blah. So he calls me that evening and said, "Hey, I hate to ask you, bro, but, I need $750. And I said, "Okay." Well, what the deal was is he had to pay $750 to that hospital before like 5 o'clock or whatever that day, or they'd sue him.
Oh, wow.
And he didn't have the money because he was out of work at the time as a surveyor, and you know, that kind of, you know, the housing market that goes up and down. And I said, "Sure." So I sent him the money. And, you know, everything was fine, but yes, for-profit hospital.
Yeah, and going back to the previous episode, if you haven't listened to the last episode, April 27th, about police and healthcare, I think it was a pretty good one. We covered a lot of things. Kind of one of the biggest things that Dr. Rosie was talking about was the biggest difference maybe is between Canada's healthcare, because she's Canadian, and ours, is that people don't go bankrupt from healthcare issues in Canada. Mm-hmm. Just doesn't happen. Whereas the number one reason in America why people go bankrupt is healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
That's effed up.
I'm
sorry. That's a hard stop. We gotta do something about that. That's insane.
Well, you know, when I was practicing dentistry, you know, before I retired, this has been probably 30 years ago, but anyway, I had two of my colleagues. One got cancer, and one had cardiovascular problems and had to have a transplant. Okay. Both of them wound up filing medical bankruptcy. And they were making good money and all that, but that was too. And I've heard of physicians that have had to file for medical bankruptcy. In fact, remember Rosie got hurt and yeah, she was worried.
She got lucky.
Yeah, she's a physician.
She was in between insurance.
Exactly. Yeah. She was scared to death because
could have been hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Oh hell yes. I mean well, it's like your son.
Yeah.
I mean, oh, my God.
$1.8 million.
$1.8 million.
In the NICU for 56 days.
Yeah, exactly. How can you justify $1.8 million for keeping a kid? And he really didn't need all that much care. He just needed observation.
Yeah, if we didn't have insurance, we would be bankrupt.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the truth of it. You know, if we, yeah, so we paid $6,000, right? But. If we didn't have, we'd still paid $6,000, even with insurance. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, which is not a small amount. You pay insurance and you still pay $6,000. But if you didn't have insurance, you're bankrupt for, and I don't know the ramifications, it's 7 years of bad credit or whatever it is. And maybe you can recover at some point. But, you know, it's like, what, why does that even exist?
Well,
anyway. I just wanted to touch on that. Callie is our dog protecting us. She's doing it again. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Callie.
Yes, my girl.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to kind of briefly touch on that, follow up on that, because that was one thing that kind of I thought about, this high healthcare costs and, you know, coming back to the bankruptcy issue. It's like, you know.
Yeah, that shouldn't be. It just shouldn't be. I guess I'm showing my progressive Democrat side there, but that shouldn't happen. Okay. Yeah. That's in this kind of, well, we shouldn't have homelessness. Well, I can get off on, we shouldn't have homeless living in the streets in the middle of winter in this country, but we do.
That's a systematic issue. That's a big one. I don't know the solution. Nobody knows the solution to homelessness.
No.
And you know, you think it's bad here? Go to California.
Oh, yeah. Go to Texas. My brother lived in Dallas. They're huge tent cities.
It's gotten to the point where, you know, people are leaving California just because of the homeless issue.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, if you're homeless, where are you going to go? Hey, go to California. The weather's great. You can, and they let you sleep on the street. That's the word on the street. You know, like, go to California.
In Miami, they've got.
Be too hot for me.
Yeah, but it never. You're not going to freeze to death.
That's true. You're not going to freeze. You know,
you ain't going to freeze to death. You might die a heat stroke, but you're not going to freeze to death.
Yeah, it's a sign of a deterioration of society. When you know, you're only as good as your weakest citizen.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
And we have a lot of weak citizens right now. And our society is sort of crumbling from the inside because of that. When you disregard people, when you disregard your own citizens as not being as valuable as another, that's when you start crumbling a little bit. And then we're seeing it. I'd like to take a quick little break.
All right.
And then I have a couple other things to talk about.
Yeah, I've got some too.
Excellent.
All right.
See you in a bit. Welcome back. I didn't really take a break. That's all right. I just needed a break because my, when you talk for a certain amount of time, it starts building up. You got to take a break. but... I'm going to let Tom tell you a story. It doesn't have to be a story. It could actually be a truth. It doesn't have to be a story.
Okay.
It could be like... It could be facts, not just like alternative facts. It could be not a story, but like he's going to try to tell you the truth.
Yeah, you know, the truth.
It might not fit your narrative. Is what I'm saying.
Exactly.
It's may or may not fit your your narrative, but he's going to try to give you some facts. Are you ready?
Yep.
Okay.
Well, the perpetuation of the big lie, and I alluded to this earlier, that I very optimistically thought that once Trump was out of office, that the the Trumpican thinking and all that would eventually fade away. But it has done anything but that. It's gotten more prominent. So now we have the Trumplicans, who are, seems that their numbers are growing, excuse me, by the day. And I ran across, this is one survey that I came across, and it struck me as kind of it's very bothersome, in that in this survey, 73% of Republicans believe that January 6th was really the work of left-wing protesters. That the left wing is the ones that agitated it and led it.
Do they have proof?
No. See, this is just the point. No. Okay. Now, 57% say that the election was stolen.
And yeah, I feel that that's a low, you know, it seems like that's a low number.
Yeah.
Maybe they're swapped. I could see like those two numbers being swapped.
Yeah. But because, no.
But hey, if not, then so be it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, me too. I thought it'd be like 80 or something percent on that. So it is a little encouraging in that manner.
Yeah. I always wonder about polls and surveys too.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, it's, you know, they're supposed to
be. But there's no other really way to know. I mean,
true.
That's all you can do, you know.
And just ask people. I mean, that's what you're doing when you do a poll. You're just going out and asking people. You know, that's all it is. But one thing that does bother me, and a lot of this bothers me, is that 25% of Republicans are avid followers of QAnon.
The ones that actually said they are. There's, it could be more. The fact that it's 25%, that's pretty high.
Yeah, I know.
I think 25% is high, but that's just the people that admitted it.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably a little bit higher than that. I guess if it's sort of a survey that's anonymous, then maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe it is 25%, but even if it's just 25%, that's high.
Yeah, yeah, I thought so.
And you know who's in there? MTG.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Pumping iron. Herself pumping iron.
Funny you should mention MTG, because I was just about to talk about her. Anyway, what bothers me, and I've always been pretty much an optimist at heart. However, right now, the state of this nation, I am very pessimistic as to where we're going. Because when you look at this, 73% of Republicans say that the right wing caused all that. There's never been any proof. Where
left
is
wing,
the
you mean?
Or the left wing, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, left wing.
And there's
where
no
is
proof.
The proof? There is absolutely no proof.
Yeah.
53%.
The only proof that we have that it happened at all is the videos.
Exactly.
Right? And the videos are pretty clear. I mean, unless people, you know, they were marching, and then it just, you could dissect, and I know the FBI has dissected those videos.
Oh, yeah.
And they're going after the people. Mm-hmm. And you know, most of those people are Trump supporters that do seem to have been, that some of them are repenting and saying I was brainwashed and stuff. And mm-hmm. you're not seeing a lot of people that are like, yes, I am Antifa. I was part of this. But now is that just not being reported, or what is the FBI, corrupt? No, probably not.
Of course. Oh yeah. Why not? You know,
so. Yeah, you're just, we're
God
not seeing any of that.
Else
we're not
is.
Seeing anything come out yeah. like that, you know. Anyway, but all we know is what we're fed.
Oh, sure, exactly. And then The 53% who believe the election was stolen. Again, my question in all this is, okay, show me the evidence. Show me how this is true. And
right now, it's the same thing with the election being stolen, right? Like,
it's like
show us the evidence. And they keep saying, it's like those cult people that say that we're, you know, the Hale-Bob comet,
oh,
or whatever.
Yeah,
it's
going to
come down. Or if it's just like, okay, this is Armageddon date. Wait, no, it didn't happen. Oh, we're going to push it back another year. That's Armageddon date. No, wait, we're going to do it. That's what these kind of people are. They're saying, but they're doing it by month. You know, Mike Lindell, the pillow guy, and all these other people.
Oh, yeah.
They're changing their date for when they're going to expose this whole lie every month. As every month passes, they change it, but they only change it by 1 month.
Well,
now they're saying September. I think it's lunacy. It's not insanity.
Exactly,
it's lunacy.
Exactly. Yes, that's my point, and that's why I am very, very pessimistic as to where this country's headed right now. It is absolute lunacy.
And the fact that that such a high percentage of Republicans are behind that lunacy. They don't shun it. They believe that. You're saying 57%. I think it's much higher. 57% of people think that the election was stolen. No, you were saying it was that had to do with January 6th. But I would like to know the percentage that think the election was still stolen.
Yeah,
to this
that was 53%.
Only 53%?
That's according to this survey.
I think that's got to be.
I think
higher.
This was done through Yahoo, but it's just.
So does that
one
is
survey.
That a factor of the fracturing too? Like is that 53% a important number because it shows the fracturing of the Republican Party? You know, because you're starting to see like only 50% are now on that side of the election was stolen, and so they're starting to go in a different direction. Like, okay, we're moving on.
But they're
still hanging on to some Trump isms, and then the other side is never going to let go, right? The 50% of the Republican Party are hardcore Trumpicans. They're never going to let go. But that either way, it's fracturing. It's fracturing. It's reducing the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
That was my point on prior shows too. Is like all of this inner battling of the Republican Party is like reducing their solidarity.
Mm-hmm.
In one thing. So if anything, it's good it's good for people that are anti-Trump because it's sort of like it's reducing the overall numbers of Trumpism. Mm-hmm. But the question is going to be, again, it's sort of back when we get to 2023, 2024, where is the Democratic Party? Where are they at? If they can remain in the middle, if they can sort of give an image of being in the middle, They're going to win again.
Oh yeah, exactly.
If they can remain sort of impartial and middle, and they will win again. If they go too far to the left, they will lose.
Yeah,
I think that's my thought. But on that, you probably had more to talk about on that if you want to. I have something that could segue into it.
You took MTG, that is Marjorie Taylor Greene. Oh, God, in America First, she and Matt Gaetz, who is going to be in a shitload of trouble because his cohort flipped on him about the sex trafficking and underage sex with minors and all this stuff. But anyway, she, as we all know, likened wearing the mask mandates to Nazi Germany.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what drug she's on. I think even her own party is kind of backing away from her on that one.
Oh, they are.
Yeah.
They are. Like, even that stupid ass McCarthy said this is reprehensible.
Right. Right. It's like what?
Yeah. But here's the problem. Here's the problem, John, that the more outrageous she becomes, the more popular she becomes. And here's an example. Her lunacy, this bullshit, she has raised $3.2 million.
Yeah. I think lunacy should be the title of this episode.
Yeah, of pure lunacy.
Pure lunacy.
Yeah.
Because it does seem to be a theme. And Marjorie Taylor Greene is sort of the mascot of that lunacy. The fact that she's got any sway at all in anything. She's challenging AOC to fights and debates and things, and physically intimidating her. She was like talking through the door, calling her out. It's like this middle school, you know, kind of like girl, totally, you know, bully, immature bully, like picking on somebody. It's like, this is a person that's been voted into the House or the Senate.
The House. No, yeah, House. She's House. Yeah.
So it's like, wow. This is where we're at as a country. We got this person. And as you say, the key is, you know, getting clicks or getting popularity or getting notoriety for outrageous acts.
Yeah.
It's not about, it's sort of this narrative thing. It's like, again, truth has no bearing. Truth is completely irrelevant in our society.
Exactly.
Right now.
But you know, the thing is, I think she had a great mentor as far as being outrageous, because look at Trump, for Christ's sake.
No one can outdo that. You know, it's going to be hard to do that.
I mean, he was so far out there I was wrong. I thought there's no way this clown is this, lunatic is going to get elected president. And by God, he did. That was discouraging. Well, then I thought, okay, first he was good for a laugh. You know, he was so outrageous. Then now he has become dangerous.
Yeah. Because our society has shifted too. Like, you know, it's the truth issue. It's also the trust issue.
Trust
is a big part of it. Mistrusting the media,
not knowing
that you can't, there is no reliable source of the truth. And then if you don't know what the truth is, then all bets are off and you can't trust the media anymore. And that was sowed by the president. The enemy of the people is the media. And so when that becomes a narrative, then the media no longer really has any sort of place, because because they're automatically disregarded as false, as fake news, and their whole job is just to sort of present facts, right? Like in report, he took that away from them. That's what Hitler did: change the media, control the media, control the narrative. That's what he did. And I'd hate to bring Hitler in all the time, but it seems to be the best example. I don't know many other examples that I can draw on, but it is true. I mean, sort of like that sort of hatred of the media and hatred of anything that you can't control. You can do no wrong. You can do no wrong at all. Anybody that says that you're doing wrong is a witch hunt, or you know, and that can get worse over time. I mean, you know, it took him 10 years to get into true power. And, you know, over that time, it can get worse and worse and worse. And where it becomes this sort of, this thing where it's like, you literally can't say anything bad about him at any point in the day ever. And even privately one-to-one, because you don't know if that person's going to report you or something, like, you know, and Gestapo and all this other stuff.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. We interviewed the Germans.
Yeah.
And my German friends, and I've talked to them, I said, they absolutely detested Trump.
Yeah.
And I asked Garrett, I said, well, why is that? He said, because a lot of Germans see him as another Hitler.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, like, that's that kind of sums up, and because these people lived with that, they know what it is.
And then you get like the Republicans saying that Obama was Hitler, and Obama's the Antichrist. Obama, you know, like, and they really believe that.
Well, Joe Biden's the Antichrist,
and Biden is Hitler. You know, Biden is Hitler.
Yeah, that's right.
There are people that say that. Like, you know, okay, so give me one example where there's some similarity. I can give you 10 with Trump.
Oh, I
can give you 10 that are like exact.
Yeah.
Can you give me one with Biden that is any similarity? I don't know.
No.
But let's not go there. We already went there, but let's not continue.
Well, but, you know, and
it turns people off, I think, the Hitler comparison, because Hitler did get to a level of evil that few other humans have gotten to. Trump aspires. I don't know. Maybe he does. I don't know. Maybe he doesn't want to kill people, racial, genocide. Not racial. I mean, Jews weren't, it's not a race, but it's a religion. But I don't know if Trump would go that far, but we're talking about the beginning of Hitler, not the end. The beginning of how he got power. That's what I talk about when I talk about Hitler with comparisons to Trump. It's the beginning, the 1923 to 1933, where he acquired power.
Right.
We don't know what Trump, is capable of.
See, yeah, exactly.
We don't know.
Yes.
And would he go that far? I don't know. But the comparisons to the early years of Hitler are eerily similar.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a very sensitive topic for a lot of people, and I understand. And I'm not trying to say he is the late stage Hitler, where the Holocaust happened and everything, or World War II. Just saying early stages, and that should be scary enough.
Right? Oh yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. His whole thing is control. I mean, that's what he's always been about. He didn't give a damn about this country. He never did. And Marjorie Taylor Greene, MTG. Boy. What has she done as a representative? Absolutely nothing.
Stir the pot in a bad way.
Okay, she didn't come. She didn't go to Washington to represent her constituents.
She tried to go in with an AR-15, I think, to go into Congress.
Yeah, exactly.
What
yeah.
else has she done? She intimidated AOC. Purport of QAnon messages on her Twitter. Yeah. What has she done? Has she raised any? She tried to get any bills passed, or done anything, or argued, or debated anything? She's made statements. It's all negative. Everything's negative. There's nothing good.
Speaking, you're talking about bills and all that. I think she lacks the intelligence to read and understand any legislation, let alone write any legislation.
So it's like Donald Trump was a reality president, and MTG's a reality House representative, like reality TV.
Yeah. Yeah.
Reality TV, which is the downfall of our society almost, when reality TV started taking over, because those people had no talent. They just got famous for being able to attract attention. Mm-hmm. And same thing, Donald Trump got famous for being able to attract attention. He doesn't have any talent. MTG doesn't have any talent. He's going to attract attention. That's a reality House representative. It's a reality president. All those reality stars like the Kardashians, they have no talent.
They're worthless.
They know how to attract attention.
Yeah,
that's
worthless.
All they do.
I know.
It's sort of a major scar on our country's history. I think this whole reality phase, I hope it goes away.
Yeah.
Because let's bring back talent. Let's bring back something where somebody's worked hard to be good at something.
How about let's bring back?
Don't just be good at attracting attention, because that's bullshit.
Well, how about bringing back the truth? Well, what kills me about Green and Gates? Now think about this. He hasn't done squat as a representative either. And what are they doing? Instead of being in Congress where they should be, they're doing this America First crap. They've been, it's like, okay, wait a minute. I thought you were supposed to be, in D.C., deciding on legislation and all that. Hell no. Neither one of them cares about it.
They're not even doing their job.
No,
Basically, they're shirking their duties.
Exactly.
They're completely ignoring their job. They're getting paid by taxpayers to do this job, and they're not doing it.
No, exactly.
They're going around and doing some bullshit like revival. All across the country, people that are already, they've already taken the Kool-Aid,
Oh yeah.
They're just like kind of patting those people on the back, saying the Kool-Aid's good, isn't it? It's an embarrassment. It's an embarrassment. This is a further embarrassment of politics in our country, and on a different level, really. It's like Trump started it with his rallies and this sort of like populism of, you know, trying to, you know, I understand rallies to get elected, mm-hmm. but not rallies when you're president.
No, what do you need those for? Yeah, what's the point?
Yeah.
You know, go out there and tell me how great I am. That was...
It's very bizarre.
In fact, it was brought out that nobody can remember any president ever having done that before. It's new. And, well, and we're talking about extremism. I saw, too, and this is, you know, an article I read, that evangelists are embracing QAnon at a very high rate. Now, to me, that makes perfect sense because they're extremists. Mm. I'm sorry if you're evangelist or extremist. So extremists embrace extremism. Mm-hmm. You know, so they're literally preaching this stuff.
Yeah.
From the pulpit.
Well, there's a lot of false prophets out there.
Oh, yeah.
Right. That's one of the worst things I think you could be in this world is a false prophet.
Yeah.
Someone claiming to be religious when you're actually not. And it's for some other objective. That's just like the worst.
It's like Jim Jones, man.
Yeah. I mean,
he was the pinnacle, you know.
Well, good stuff there, Tom. But I, you know, there's been something just in the last couple of days that, on Biden, apparently his fiscal budget for 2021, 2022, which is July through fiscal's July through July or yeah, July six, through June. So
$6 trillion or something like
six
that.
$6 trillion. Yeah. So people are flaunting that number and saying how high that is, but that includes the $2.3 trillion infrastructure and mm-hmm. the $1.8 trillion for education and families, which is $4.1 trillion. And normally, I think the fiscal budget in like 2019 prior to COVID was $4.5 trillion.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's not, it's not out of the ordinary. It's not out of the question. In 2020, the federal government spent $6.6 trillion. $2.1 trillion was for COVID relief. So it's all sort of in line, but again, they're going to distort it and make it sound like he's overspending. Mm-hmm. They're going to run a $1.3 trillion deficit for like another 10 years. And sort of, it's what it is. I looked into it a little bit. I didn't, forgive me for not being extensively brilliant on this subject, but it seems like it's fairly responsible.
Yes.
But also he's given in a little bit. Like he's raised the, you know, he says your taxes aren't going to go up if you make less than 400,000, where it used mm-hmm. to be 250,000. So like he's not totally making it, you know, it's soft, you know, it's mm-hmm. kind of soft. It's not hardcore. I think it's realistic. Taxes are going to go up on corporations. There's inflation happening now mm-hmm. too. Prices are going up, gas is going up. It's probably going to continue and prices could continue to go up. I think that's just a factor of the economy, but again, I'm not an economist.
Well, you know, you were talking about the infrastructure bill.
Yeah.
Okay. I think a couple of days ago, the Republicans countered with like 980 some billion. Okay. So, but my point is the infrastructure in this country is appalling. And if we don't do it now, if we don't improve it and work on it now, mm-hmm. when? Because every day we delay, it's getting worse.
Yeah. Like, I don't understand that. And the funny thing was that during the last year of the Trump administration, that infrastructure was a big push. Right. Yeah. They were touting it. It's like, we're going to rebuild America. we're gonna have an infrastructure bill, and I remember this. And they were they were touting it, how great it's gonna be, and then as soon as they changed administrations, they're like, no, we're not doing infrastructure. It's just such politics and such BS. Like the country needs it, you know. We need it. Yeah, and there was probably a little bit of fluff in that infrastructure, maybe a couple hundred billion that could be removed. But say it goes down to like a little below 2 trillion. Just make it happen, you know. And our schools need it. Our, you know, families need it. We need this stuff, you know. We spend so much on other things, and, you know, it's, I don't know. I don't understand. It's like the constituents require this pushback, this, you know, I don't know, when it comes down to it, it seems like the majority of citizens actually want these infrastructure stuff to happen. And
sure.
It's the politicians that, you know, are pushing back more than the actual citizens. So I don't know. It's a $6 trillion budget for fiscal year 2021. It doesn't seem like it should, you know, really big, that big of a deal. And there's a lot of people that are going to just continue to badmouth it and say how horrible it is and how the Democrats are spending, blah, 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 blah. And again, it's like a broken record, you know? I just wanted to bring that up. In case you weren't aware, it's not the most exciting thing in the world to talk about, but I was curious because I wanted to know if that infrastructure stuff and those other things were included in the $6 trillion, or if it was in addition to. Because if it was in addition to, then you're talking about 8-9 trillion. Then it starts getting a little bit much. Because I'm not giving Joe Biden a blank check. You know, we still have to care about, you know, how they're running the country. But I have to say, I feel like they're doing a pretty good job so far. We have to sort of keep an eye on them, and, you know, always monitor if they're going too far to the left. Like, that's not like anything I can do about it. We can talk about it. I can't do anything about it. But like if it does start going off really far off and progressive, one after the other, boom, 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 it's like, uh-oh, here we go. Maybe we need to start third party.
Yeah, we've gone too far, yeah.
Maybe we start thinking about third party, you know, because, you know.
Well, you know, we've talked about this before, John. I think you feel your feelings about extremism are the same as mine. I'm not into extremism anything. Because, again, you become an extremist, you close your ears, and you become blind.
You've already made up your mind.
Exactly.
Before you come to the conversation.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's not what we're all about here at the John and Tom Show.
Yeah, we're kind of...
We didn't get any guests today, unfortunately, but... you know, I think it was a good conversation.
Yeah.
We could probably wrap it up. I could consider calling somebody, but I don't know.
I don't know.
Do you have anybody that you want to talk to?
See.
I don't even know.
I can't.
That's all right. You know what?
I can't think of anybody.
I'm okay with
it. Offhand.
I think we can wrap it up. Is there anything else that you had in mind that you wanted to talk about? I would like to let you all know that we do have a Twitter account. Just look up the John and Tom Show if you want to follow us, make some comments. I do make comments every now and then. I don't think Tom does. If he has any thoughts, he just text me. And then...
Well, you know, now, John, don't kick the old man down. I'm not used to it yet.
Well, if you have any...
It took me a while to get used to SMS, okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, if you would like to make any comments on Twitter,
okay,
feel free to text me and I'll give you the password and you can go in there.
And I do have a Twitter account.
You do? Okay.
Yep. Yep.
All right. Excellent. Well, we have a Twitter account. That's probably easier than email. I've been saying the John and Tom Show at gmail.com. We're not getting many people. I don't think people use email for that anymore.
No.
It's probably easier just to do the Twitter thing.
The only thing I get on email anymore is spam. You know,
yeah.
I do it. Every day I have to clean out the folder so it doesn't get too full, you know.
Yeah. But my dad never even sent an email in his life. So he's 81. still never sent a text or an email.
Well, so, bless his heart.
Yeah, he's resisted. But thank you all for joining us today. And what else you got, Tom?
I think that's about it. But I guess the only thing I want to say is that right now, I see this country going downhill rapidly. Things need to change, and they need to change quickly. That's
mostly because of
the big lie,
the Trumplicans.
The Trumplicans are doing a hell of a lot of damage to this country, and yeah, they continue to. And I don't see it getting any worse, because again, I thought, and this is what, you know, all the media moguls were saying, that, oh yeah, okay, once Trump's gone, it's going to fade, you know, in a few months, and you won't hear any more about him. But hell, it's going the other way. It's getting worse.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish I had better news on that, but I don't.
Maybe so, next time.
Yeah, maybe. Well, yeah, we took a month off. We haven't had a show in about a month. I took a little vacation, a much needed vacation, and I'm back. I hope you enjoyed the show. And again, if you have any thoughts or questions or requests for shows, topics, find us on Twitter, The John and Tom Show. It's just J-O-N and T-O-M, The John and Tom Show. All right. Thanks, everybody.
Okay. Goodbye.